Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Finance Curse: How Global Finance Is Making Us All Poorer is a work of investigative political economy by Nicholas Shaxson, a journalist known for writing on tax havens, offshore wealth, and the resource curse. The book challenges the common belief that a large financial sector automatically brings national prosperity through jobs, tax revenue, investment, and global prestige. Shaxson argues instead that finance can become oversized, politically dominant, and economically extractive, turning from a useful service into a burden on the wider economy. Its focus is especially strong on Britain and the City of London, but the argument extends to global financial centers, tax havens, private equity, hedge funds, monopoly power, and deregulation. The book combines reporting, historical explanation, policy critique, and economic research to show how financialization can weaken productive industry, increase inequality, distort democracy, and reward rent extraction over real value creation. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, oversized finance can become a national economic burden. Shaxson builds the book around the idea that finance has a useful size but becomes damaging when it expands beyond that role. The argument is modeled partly on the resource curse, where countries rich in oil or minerals can suffer corruption, weak institutions, and distorted development. In the finance version, a dominant financial sector absorbs skilled workers, political attention, capital, and institutional energy that might otherwise support manufacturing, public services, innovation, or smaller businesses. This does not mean that banking, insurance, credit, and saving systems are inherently harmful. Shaxson distinguishes between finance as infrastructure and finance as a self-serving industry. The problem begins when financial activity grows mainly by trading assets, designing tax avoidance structures, extracting fees, engineering debt, or influencing regulation. The book, therefore, reframes a major policy assumption: a country may not be richer simply because its financial center is larger. Beyond a certain point, more finance can mean higher costs, weaker productivity, greater instability, and a political economy organized around protecting financial interests. Secondly, the fried egg model separates useful finance from harmful extraction. One of the clearest concepts associated with the book is the fried egg image of the financial sector. The yolk represents the useful core of finance, including payment systems, household savings, ordinary lending, business credit, and risk management. The white represents activities that grow around the core, but often do little to improve productive capacity. These include aggressive tax planning, opaque offshore structures, rent-seeking mergers, excessive trading, complex financial engineering, and advisory services designed to shift wealth rather than create it. The strength of this framework is that it avoids a simplistic anti-finance argument. Shaxson is not claiming that economies can function without financial services. He is asking which parts of finance serve society and which parts mainly serve insiders. The distinction matters because policy debates often treat the sector as a single national asset. If the harmful outer layer is counted alongside the useful core, governments may protect activities that raise profits for financiers while imposing larger hidden costs on workers, taxpayers, consumers, and productive firms. Thirdly, tax havens and financial secrecy connect local prosperity to global harm. A major part of the book links the finance curse to Shaxson's earlier work on offshore finance. Financial centers do not operate only as domestic banking hubs. They are often connected to networks of secrecy jurisdictions, shell companies, light-touch regulation, and tax avoidance services. These networks allow wealthy individuals, corporations, and sometimes corrupt actors to move assets, reduce tax liabilities, obscure ownership, and escape public accountability. Shaxson argues that the damage runs in two directions. Tax havens export harm to other countries by weakening their tax bases and making illicit or abusive flows harder to trace. At the same time, the host financial center suffers internally because its laws, politics, professional culture, and public priorities become shaped around serving mobile capital. In this account, offshore finance is not a marginal technical specialty. It is part of the institutional machinery that makes wealth extraction respectable, profitable, and difficult to challenge. The book is especially concerned with how Britain and its linked offshore network have normalized these practices. Fourthly, private equity and hedge funds illustrate wealth extraction in the real economy. Shaxson uses the behavior of modern investment vehicles to show how financial power reaches beyond trading floors and into ordinary businesses. Private equity and hedge fund strategies can involve buying companies, loading them with debt, taking fees and dividends, selling assets, cutting costs, and exiting before long-term consequences become visible. The book presents this as a central example of wealth extraction rather than wealth creation. The key issue is not that every investment fund destroys value, but that the incentives often reward short-term financial returns, even when employees, suppliers, communities, customers, or the underlying enterprise are weakened. Shaxson is particularly interested in sectors that carry public importance, such as local journalism, where financial ownership can affect democratic life as well as balance sheets. By examining these mechanisms, the book makes financialization concrete. It shows how abstract financial returns may be produced through leverage, restructuring, tax positioning, and control rights, rather than through better products, stronger services, or long-term productive investment. Lastly, political capture makes financial reform harder than technical regulation. The book treats the finance curse not only as an economic problem, but also as a political one. A large financial sector gains influence through lobbying, campaign finance, professional networks, revolving doors, media prestige, and the claim that national prosperity depends on keeping finance happy. This influence can shape tax rules, competition policy, corporate law, bank regulation, and public attitudes toward wealth. Shaxson argues that the result is a self-reinforcing system. Finance expands, then uses its expanded power to defend further deregulation and resist scrutiny. The implication is that reform cannot be limited to technical adjustments inside banking law. It requires stronger tax enforcement, transparency over ownership, tougher action against monopolistic behavior, constraints on abusive financial engineering, and a willingness to let socially useless financial activity shrink. The book also recognizes a practical difficulty. Even if the analysis is persuasive, changing policy requires political will against a sector with unusual resources and cultural authority. This tension gives the book much of its urgency and its sober tone. In conclusion, The Finance Curse is best suited to readers who want a critical but accessible account of how modern finance shapes economies, politics, and inequality. It will be especially useful for policymakers, journalists, economists, campaigners, students of political economy, and general readers who suspect that post-crisis financial reform has not addressed deeper structural problems. The intellectual benefit of the book is its reframing of finance from a presumed engine of prosperity into a sector that must be judged by function, scale, and social cost. Its practical value lies in helping readers distinguish useful financial services from activities that mainly extract rents, avoid taxes, concentrate power, or transfer risk to others. Compared with many books about the 2008 crisis or Wall Street misconduct, Shaxson's work stands out because it connects financialization, tax havens, offshore secrecy, private equity, monopoly power, and political capture into one broader framework. It is less a narrow scandal narrative than an argument about national development and democratic control. Its strongest contribution is the idea that shrinking harmful finance may not mean sacrificing prosperity. It may be a condition for rebuilding it. If you would like to support Nicholas Shaxson, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.